Hi, degenerate angels. It's another beautiful day in the apocalypse. Welcome back to your favorite first-class flight into the underworld. A bad trip turned good, a profound spiritual awakening in the form of an average white woman's podcast called Tales of Taboo. For anyone who is new here, or for those of you who just want to hear as much of my voice as possible within the span of an hour, my name is Allie Weiss. I am a downtown New York Z-list actress, multimedia host, and writer obsessed with all people, experiences, careers, and ideas outside the bounds of what society considers traditionally socially acceptable, accessible, or quote-unquote normal. Each week, I invite my audience and their friends, and sometimes even their friends of friends, to share their life stories behind the shield of complete anonymity. But every once in a while, I encounter an exceptional person who is willing to go on the record with their unconventional hot takes and life stories and will sit down for a one-on-one chat. So some of these past interview subjects have included magician and mind reader Jason Surin, high-end escort Vivian Cole, and bikini model Anna Herron. And this week, we have the internet's best friend, Evan Ross Katz, in the house. And I guess by the house, I mean the other box on the Zoom chat. But regardless, for those of you who don't know Evan, he's a writer and a podcast host who's become wildly popular online for his smart and witty takes on all things pop culture. You know that Euphoria cover of New York Magazine? Yeah, Evan did the interviews. So neither Evan nor the celebrities that he adores might be considered like particularly taboo, but taking a challenging stance against our collective obsession with fame definitely is. And this is something I've wanted to do for a long time on this show. And Evan was the perfect person to discuss and debate it all with. I hope you're all as charmed as I was by him and love this conversation we had about celebs and their stans and everything in between. One quick note before we get into it. Tales of Taboo merch is now live on my website, which is allieweissworld.com. We've got sweatshirts, we've got thongs, and they are the stuff of your Y2K dreams. And more importantly, buying them is the easiest way to support this show without me having to resort to like weird, corny sponsors. So please do consider a purchase. The sweatshirts are so comfortable. But this isn't about me. This is about Evan. And this is about you. So without further ado, this is Tales of Taboo. All right. So let's kick it off with a big question. Why do you think everyone is so fucking obsessed with celebrities? And is this a new phenomenon, or is this something that has existed for a long time but has shape-shifted within our media landscape?
What if I was like, I really wish you would have preempted me that you were going to ask such a question? No, I'm just kidding. Okay,
why did you use foul language? I should have warned you that I was going to curse on this podcast.
Exactly. Well, I think people have been obsessed with celebrities since, like, I would, you know, pinpoint it to like the 1950s and the 1960s with the original movie studios, like your MGMs of the world, and the way that actors used to have contracts with movie studios and would sign multi-picture deals. And one of the reasons why they would sign those multi-picture deals is because they were investing in those stars. And they were saying, you know, by signing Judy Garland to a multi-picture deal, we're going to invest in her success, because the more successful that she is, the more money our films make. And how do they make said celebrity successful? By making her accessible, by having her do, at the time, it was radio interviews, which are super common. Obviously, the beginnings of television was happening. Her famous appearance, this is later in her career, but with Barbra Streisand doing Happy Days Are Here Again, it's like things like that, that get you, that get people talking about you. So I don't think it's a new phenomenon by any measure. I think there's machinations of celebrity. I think one era of celebrity, I think, that we find ourselves looking back upon a lot is like that 2007, you know, era, the height of like Britney Spears and Amanda Bynes. And I think there's a lot of looking back upon how we spoke, not you and I, but we like the collective conscious, we collective society spoke about right. Female celebrities, particularly young female celebrities, the objectification, the misogyny, et cetera. long-winded answer to say, I think we've always been obsessed with it, but I think like there are certain celebrities and certain news stories that take on larger lives and sort of end up ensconcing people that are not typically those that are interested in celebrities, such as the Kanye Kim story right now, I think has become bigger than just a celebrity news story.
Right.
So I think we've always been obsessed with them, but like, I don't see there any, I think that there are ways in which being interested in celebrities is connects us. So I've always really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So I usually hate referencing the pandemic because I do everything in my power to provide content that is escapist in some capacity, but undoubtedly throughout the pandemic, we all spent more time online, and I am probably the worst digital content creator on planet Earth because I don't actually like being on social media, but it's impossible to escape when you log onto your Instagram app, all the Stan accounts that show up on your For You page or that are recommended for you. And maybe it's because of my age, maybe it's because of growing up in New York City. I don't really know, but I find myself so baffled by how much time and energy goes into worshiping a celebrity's image. And of course, we've done this our whole life, just in different ways, magazines, Perez Hilton, which we'll talk about. But I'm curious to know how you think, like, just the sheer amount of time that we spent online while in quarantine may have impacted the level to which we worship these people who are two-dimensional to us, or we have the time and the mental space to focus so heavily on another person's life.
First of all, I don't think that you're the worst content creator on social media. I think that would be Olivia Rodrigo. I think she is remarkably bad at social media for being such a popular figure in pop culture.
Thank you.
To answer your question, I would say that I think what shifted, in addition to, as you pointed out, just spending more time looking at these celebrities, was I think that a lot of people began to question the role of celebrity, particularly zooming in to the Black Lives Matter movement in May of 2020. I think that you saw a lot of celebrities sharing infographics or celebrities kind of doing a 180 in terms of making content that was less about themselves and more about corralling their audience to look at something that they were looking at, and sometimes to great effect, sometimes less so. I'm thinking, for instance, Kerry Washington, the great Kerry Washington, yesterday posted about Disney and the Don't Say Gay bill that's happening right now in Florida. And I was like, wow, that is just an incredibly powerful voice to weigh in on this conversation, and one that a lot of people don't know about. And I was like, I was gonna say terribly effective, but I mean terribly in the good way, terribly effective.
Right,
but like,
effective darling. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. So that's an instance where I'm like, wow, she is using the power of celebrities to amplify a conversation that many aren't having. But I think in the case of May 2020, you saw a lot of celebrities that it appeared to be, you know, because this is all appearances, it appeared to be that they were sort of latching themselves onto the cause because it was the trend du jour, which ultimately is antithetical to the cause in many ways. So I think what we witnessed a lot of was celebrities grappling with what it meant to make content. And this is, you know, I'm speaking of the Black Lives Matter movement, but also, as you mentioned, there's the pandemic on top of that. So I think you had celebrities, some of whom were questioning the role of their celebrity, and others of whom were just sort of like opaque to all of that. And were like, let's just like hit the gas and get in on the trending topics of today, some to better avail than others. But I think that's what I think shifted, was sort of like celebrities questioning what it means to have a platform and what to do with it.
Right. I think that's a really interesting point that I actually didn't think of until now, which is, around, you know, summer of 2020, there was this expectation that every celebrity also needed to be an activist or needed to be something more. Whereas I think a huge part of the reason why we fetishized that early to mid 2000s celebrity era is because celebrities were expected to be as celebrity as possible. Whereas now, if somebody is famous and respected or just worshipped for any which reason, if they're not doing something more than themselves, we shame them. And so I think that now, because there are so many job roles that are encompassed within celebrity, they've taken on like a greater role in our day-to-day lives. Whereas before, perhaps it was like escapist or voyeuristic. Now they're quote unquote important, you know, or yes, thought leaders.
Yes. And I think what's interesting about that, and I don't have an opinion about this so much as an observation of it, but I think that you have some celebrities like Bella Hadid comes to mind as someone who has spoken out on political matters at certain junctures in her career. And then when advances happen within conversations that she previously was having publicly, she doesn't comment on that, as she is right to do, or not right to do, as she is, you know, has the autonomy to do. And then people are like, why aren't you speaking out about this thing? You were speaking out about it before, which is a justifiable thing to ask, because, you know, you use the word thought leader, and I agree with you. And the thing about a leader is you expect them to lead at all times. But I think sometimes what the celebrity grapples with is not only if and when to weigh in on a conversation, but like the cadence with which to weigh in on it. And then also if they're going to make it into their thing, because I think that that is another expectation placed on celebrity in 2022, is that like there are certain, you know, you look at all the celebrities who latch on to the mental health conversation, whatever that means. And I think that that's become something that it's like certain celebrities want you to associate them with certain topics. You know, body right. positivity was a big one several years ago. And so I think that's something that I find really fascinating, is like celebrities who want to weigh in on a certain matter once or twice, and then sort of see this expectation from both fans and just trolls alike of people being like, you need to say more.
Right, right. Exactly. It's almost like they're taking on social justice causes the same way that they take on like an alliance with a fashion house. You know, totally. It's just yep. that kind of surface level association. But because you brought up Bella Hadid, I'd love to like briefly speak about what she did recently on the cover of Vogue, where she finally acknowledged that she has in fact had a nose job. And obviously she's been on a little bit of a PR tear talking about her depression and her anxiety and her mental health. And, you know, it's difficult for me to figure out how I feel about this situation, because on the one hand, I think any public figure who admits to having their face altered or their body altered, it's rare. We don't see that very often, that people lean into that, especially not from somebody like her, who is famous solely for her face. For her to say, this is fake, I think any progress in that department is valuable. But on the flip side, A, we all know that she has more work done than she copped to. And B, how effective is it really for somebody in the utmost position of privilege to say, I'm suffering? Because on the one hand, I do believe that everybody's story is valid. Everybody's mental health journey is valid. And just because somebody has more resources than others doesn't mean they don't have a right to speak out. But I also don't know, I guess my question is, why now? You know, like, why after all this time, after all this speculation about her face, her body, her life, why now? And is it really making a difference, in your opinion, for her to kind of be a champion of this cause?
Well, this to me seems to be more of a question for the writers and editors at Vogue, because I too had a lot of questions after reading that very lengthy, but not very substantive interview right. that Bella did. I think that it seemed very clear that Vogue was wanting to maintain a relationship with Bella Hadid. And one of the terms, unspoken perhaps, of that relationship is that they speak about her with a little bit of a delicate nature. There was a delicate, right. like a delicate nature with which they handled that interview. My question is, you know, you mentioned that all these stories are valid. I agree with you. They're all valid. That's one check mark. Are they worth telling is sort of exactly. like the next check mark. And that's the part that I often am not sure the answer to. I imagine there's a girl or two girls or maybe 1,000 girls out there who read that article and it did something for them that is meaningful. And I would never devalue other people getting something from something that I got nothing from. But yeah, I couldn't help but read a lot of nepotism, a lot of privilege, and a lot of not sure, again, from the writer and editor, how they wanted us, the reader, to feel about said thing.
Right.
Not to make this a Kim Kanye episode, but in I really enjoyed Trevor Noah's recent 10-minute monologue about Kim and Kanye, because I felt like by the end of it, I felt like Trevor Noah had a takeaway for right. how he felt and wanted
he had an
and
opinion.
How, yeah, he had an opinion yes. and how he wanted us to not necessarily see this, but like he had a POV about it. He wasn't regurgitating news. And with Bella, And again, it's not Bella's job to share her story in the hope of making you feel any kind of way. I do think it's incumbent upon the writers and editors to say, by sharing these stories, here's what we hope our reader can at the very least glean. It's not always about like, we're going to change their lives with Bella Hadid's story. But yeah, I wasn't sure what the takeaway was. And I share in the sentiment that was expressed online that I think it's worth, if she's going to cop to getting a nose job at the age of 14 years old, I have some follow-up questions. And I think that those are the due diligence of the reporter to ask those questions. And so when a comment like that is made without any follow-up, and again, there might be, there's undoubtedly, not undoubtedly, but there's perhaps circumstances that, you know, could color my understanding of this, but they weren't brought up. So yeah, that article, it left me wanting more. Well, yeah. I don't know if it left me wanting something.
Exactly. Not necessarily more of the content, but like, I think that we are seeing more and more a lack of like hard hitting journalism. And I think that we associate hard hitting journalism with shit that's happening on the front lines.
Hi, I'm Josie Toda.
I'm Alicia Pascual Peña.
And I'm Yasmin Hamidi. We're three best friends, like literally sisters out of the same womb.
We're also actresses and disruptors and the host of new Crooked Media podcast, Dare We Say. Every week, we'll dive into the issues affecting our generation, from income inequality, LGBTQ rights, and the nightmare that is Zara's landing page.
This is about to get, dare we say, heated. New episodes drop every Thursday starting August 11th.
Subscribe to Dare We Say wherever you listen to your podcasts.
But I used to love like a really good in-depth celebrity profile. GQ used to do this really well. Esquire used to do this really well. Where a reporter Vanity Fair, where a reporter would spend tons of time with a celebrity and observe them as much as they ask them questions and formulate their own opinion of who this person was as a person. Like, you remember Lindsay Lohan in Vanity Fair, where it like came out that she was like bulimic and she was recovering for the 17th time. Like, I remember reading that and just being like, yeah, like this is how things should be approached. Because if you're a journalist, it's not your job to be the celebrity's friend. And I feel like this is a huge thing that I wanted to bring up with you as we continue to talk through this episode. But I just feel like we have been so sensitized and like whitewashed as a culture. And I don't mean that in terms of necessarily just like cancel culture and people getting offended. I mean, like, people don't want to ask hard-hitting questions anymore. People don't want to challenge audiences nearly as much anymore. I think there's so much emphasis on the numbers game and attracting as many eyeballs and as much commentary as possible that people from all different sectors of entertainment are a little bit afraid to take a stand in like a really meaningful way. And I don't know if you agree with that sentiment, and I would love to talk about it, but you know, I think part of the reason why that the whole Bella situation hit me so much, aside from the 14-year-old nose job, was that I was like, what's the point of this? This is just, it's just there. What is anybody trying to say? What kind of conversation is going to come out of this? And I think that there's this kind of, no one wants to piss anyone off anymore, and it's taking a toll on journalism and entertainment, in my opinion.
I do not consider myself always a journalist, and there are many instances in which I am interviewing someone and I am functioning as their friend, and I will do my best to bring out the best from them. I have an interview coming up on my podcast with a celebrity who I am sensitive to the conversation around them because they think they've been done wrong in the media a lot. And so we are currently in the process of doing pre-interviews in the hope of like, I'm working with him to determine, because there's some questions that I want to ask. And I'm working with him in advance, not giving him the questions in advance, but hashing out topics and just creating the boundaries. And that's not journalistic. It's just not. It's me as a friend operating in a space, and I'm not beholden to a publication, and saying, I think a more fruitful conversation can happen if we do a little bit of homework in advance of the assignment.
Having to walk on the line between wanting to make your interview subject feel comfortable, wanting them to feel as though they can trust you, wanting to make them feel that this is a place where they can be themselves and give an honest interview that's actually going to provide either like a look into their lives or some sort of like larger service. But you also want to ask the right questions. And I think this is just an interesting conversation to have because of the changing nature of journalism in the podcasting space and with, you know, friends of celebrities doing their interviews. It's like, how do you find those parameters for yourself, for example? Like, where do you draw the line when you're thinking, okay, as a writer, as a reporter, as a commenter on culture, I want to do a good job, but I also don't want to hurt my friend. How do
that's why I created my own podcast, because I don't know the answers to that all the time. And so if it's my own podcast, I can kind of do as I please and not feel like I need to have some sort of rubric for how it's done. But I did just want to comment to your point in that my approach has always been, I don't think celebrities owe us their stories. I do not go into an interview with the hope of like uncovering the real. Honestly, half the time, the real is not that interesting. I think that I observed this, you know, like when I interviewed Jennifer Coolidge, which is that like the Jennifer Coolidge of most of the interviews that she does, like when you watch Jennifer Coolidge on Jimmy Fallon, that's not Jennifer Coolidge. That is a character that Jennifer has developed over the years. That is Jennifer Coolidge doing an interview. It's very different than the Jennifer that I have dinner with. And that's fascinating to me. And she's just one example of it. And she's developed that, I think, in many ways, subconsciously, as a way to protect herself. It's self-preservation. And also, just going back to the Bella thing real quickly, I wish that she had not spoken about her plastic surgery, because, well, obviously, if she wants to, she can. But like, I think there's something to be said about just doing something and ignoring the naysayers, or just not giving that sort of any conversation. Because as you pointed out, it seems that there's more that has been done that was being copped to. So it's kind of like this, like, almost half-hearted, like, I'm going to go there, but I'm not going to go there. And to me, it's either like, either don't go there ever, which I totally respect, or go there. And it felt a little bit like halfway in the water, dipping your toe in. And it's like, you got to either jump in, or we're not getting in the water. Today's not a good day to get in the water.
Right, exactly. It's like feigned intimacy, which really pisses me off. That's like a big problem that I have with social media as a whole, is that the accessibility of TikTok and Twitter and Instagram has made us feel like we're getting such an inside look at not only celebrities, but like at each other. And really, we're just seeing a highlight reel. It's a passe thing to call social media a highlight reel at this point, but that's exactly what it is. And it bothers me that kind of, I guess, the ability to develop these parasocial relationships with people, but you don't really know who they are at all. It's like you think that because you're getting a selfie in their bedroom, or because you see a picture of their baby, or because you're behind the scenes with them, you have a better understanding of who they are, but that's really not the case. And I'm one of those people who actually has not been thrilled about the increased accessibility of celebrities, or appearance of accessibility of celebrities. And, you know, we can talk about this because I'm sure that there are some benefits to it. But I think what I liked so much about the early, mid, late 2000s is, you know, you had to work to get like a morsel of information about these people. And one of the first questions I wrote down to ask you, which I guess I can now ask you in the middle of the interview, is what were your kind of formative pop culture years like? Like, how did you absorb celebrity information? Because for me, so much of that was the ritual of going home after school and looking at Perez Hilton and refreshing Perez Hilton over and over and over again. And I don't know if you ever used Ocean Up, the blog that was like dedicated to young Disney stars, but that, I forget who showed me that website, but it was kind of like a deep cut blog that exposed like Demi Lovato's drug addiction before that was common knowledge, and like Miley Cyrus's nudes. And there was a certain maliciousness for sure that existed in this kind of blogosphere of that time. But I really enjoyed that We didn't know anything about these people, but what we were getting from them was their imperfection. What was being leaked about them was their humanism. It was like them doing things that were relatable, even though they were not relatable because they were so inaccessible to us. And I think what's happened with social media is this idea that they are more relatable, even though we're also getting like pretty much the same lack of information. Do you follow what I'm saying? Like, I think,
but I think that that's with the contract that level of, it's like, it's almost like what you're saying is like their effort to be relatable or just like us via social. It's almost like how many people are just taking that as, you know, basically it's like how much of what they're putting down are people actually picking up. And for a lot of us, it's like, sounds like you, like me, recognize the fact that like, this is a highlight reel, as you said.
Yes.
But I do think there's an increasingly smooth brained audience that sees this stuff and is just like, you know, I think about like mommy bloggers, like Eva LaRue, Susan Sarandon's daughter. And it's like, I see her content. And to me, it's like an SNL sketch, but there is a whole fandom of hers that see her as a respectable figure in the mommy blogger universe, of which I know nothing about. So yeah, I think that it's, people find an audience that, and sometimes really large audiences that see, it's like, for instance, I think about like Joe Rogan. It's like, there are millions of people out here who take him very seriously and think he is a great interviewer and blah, blah, blah. And to discount that is doing your own intelligence a disservice in my mind. So yes, I think that one of the things about these celebrities, despite the fact that I might, you know, I just recently, this Dove Cameron person, I had never heard of her. And then she was the guest judge on Drag Race. And I go on social and everyone's like, this happened to me with Olivia Rodrigo months ago. Like just because you don't know about it. And I'm someone who considers myself, air quotes, in the know about pop culture. There are so many things I don't know. And so I think a lot of people take these people that might be a little eye-rolly to me and get a lot of value from it. And in turn, I sort of have to question my own eye-rolliness and say, if enough people see something here, it's at least worth considering it. Even if I don't find it worthwhile, I can still find it valid.
Yeah. I don't know. I think as somebody who's been working in a couple of different facets of the digital space for like the past 6 years, I have a hard time digesting that like anybody can find an audience. And maybe that's just me like being elitist, or me like, you know, being a New Yorker and not believing that like anybody from wherever can make something of themselves online. But I guess the concern with like influencer culture and how no matter what you look like or what your interests are or how niche your thing is, you can find an audience and become someone who either like achieves a certain level of fame or like is making a lot of money or both. The more we allow this to happen in such a widespread way, does that not devalue real talent? Does that not devalue somebody who's put in years becoming like a really good writer, or who has climbed their way through a television network to become a producer, like, or somebody who went to an acting conservatory for years to like really hone their craft, or went to Juilliard? Like, it's not to say that I don't believe that everybody deserves a chance to show the world why they're special. I just wonder if the widespread internet fame is devaluing people who spend years really trying to hone a particular craft.
Yes, it devalues it, but it makes me think of the Madonna quote, so now what? It's like, yes, it devalues it, and that's what's happening. And I also think that that person who went to Juilliard and is remarkably talented, that's not all it takes. Like it's basically like we've crafted a new rubric for success, for better or for worse. And so yes, we have devalued talent, but I guess the counterpoint, and I'm not saying I totally agree with this, but like the counterpoint being, it's like, I think we've also, the definition of talent is shifting in real time. And it sounds like you want what you grew up with. And I get that. I get that. But I wanted to go back because you were asking, I grew up before the internet. So for me, seeking out my pop culture was People magazine at the grocery store, because my mom would get it, so I would read it. And then BB and Bop, which are these now defunct teen magazines that I was obsessed with. Mm-hmm. And then TRL, VH1 pop-up videos. But I had to really... my seeking of it out was, I was less able to curate my pop culture because my pop culture was what was in front of me. So it's funny, you mentioned like Demi Lovato and Miley Cyrus. Like I didn't even know who Demi Lovato was until a few years ago. I think it was the Cool for the Summer. Like that, she was not someone I knew Skyscraper, but like, that's not someone I grew. She is not a part of my zeitgeist. And right. Miley didn't come on my radar until Bangers. Like, I didn't. Hannah Montana, again, just too old for that. So it's interesting in that, like, a lot of the pop culture that I got as a child was fed to me. And I think a lot of today people seek out the pop culture that they like, right. Or it comes up on their feed so much through people sharing it that, like, they're inundated with a thing. And that's where I think, like, hate watching comes in so much today, because it's like, you can't avoid the things you hate very easily. Whereas I just sort of like, and again, there were less celebrities too when I was coming up, but it's like, I went on TRL every day. And also, mind you, it's like Christina Aguilera's Come On Over Baby video was on TRL every fucking day. So yeah. I was just watching the Come On Over video every day. That was part of, like, I got home at 4 p.m., TRL began, Carson Daly. You know, is it going to be number one? Is it going to be number two? That was the big, you know, the big drama in my day. So it was just a completely different experience, like a different prism with which to view pop culture, in that there was less of it. And I wasn't curating it the way that I am today.
Yeah.
Or the way I'm able to today, rather.
So I find that for people who are interested in pop culture, and specifically in celebrities, they usually have some sort of, motive sounds like a word that kind of is like filled with like negative intentions, but like something that they're kind of looking for within public figures. And I think there's been a lot of discussion about this as it pertains to like watching women crumble, like with Britney and Paris Hilton and the redemption of all these like paparazzi figures of, you know, the mid-2000s time that we've been talking about, and how a lot of people loved watching these women fail because it made them feel better about their own failures. And as I mentioned before, my obsession with kind of Disney High, if you want to call it that, like the era of the Demi and the Miley and the High School Musical, I loved anytime a piece of a quote unquote negative press would come out about these people, because it made me feel better about what I was getting up to as a very depressed, lost, confused teenager in New York. And for these kids who lived in LA and drove the fancy cars and had like these so-called amazing jobs that they got to go to every day, and they wore like the best clothes and everything looked perfect, to see that behind the scenes, they were still doing the same experimenting that I was, and they were suffering from the same kind of existential unhappiness that I was, it gave me this real sense of like, okay, I'm not such a fuck up after all. Even people who kind of get to that level of desirable success are still suffering. And even now, I don't engage with celebrity culture nearly as much as I used to, but when I do go online to kind of seek it out, it's always me looking for the profiles that might, you know, reveal something a little bit darker or dirtier about a celebrity. And for me, it's very clearly a way to deal with my own kind of dysfunctions. Obviously, you know, I've read about your connection to Buffy pretty extensively, but for you growing up in Pittsburgh and being gay, I mean, what was your fascination with celeb culture, a way to kind of deal with that or come to terms with that? Or was it just not that deep?
It's never not that deep, right? I think for me, I latched on, I mean, without question, to the fantasy. But I also think, as I always say, it's like I was told I was gay before I knew I was gay. And one of the indicators for others was just this fascination with female celebrities, whether that be, I mean, Christina Aguilera was huge for me because she was a Pittsburgh girl. I'm a Pittsburgh boy. So I had that connection immediately. But then also obviously Sarah Michelle Gellar, but also just so many of the late 90s celebs and the ones that were popping up in Teen People. I think I just really like was fascinated. And as someone who like didn't find a subject in school that like was particularly interesting to me, I think I approached celebrity the same way that like my social studies teacher was approaching, you know, the First World War. And I didn't just want to know what was in the latest magazine. It would like lead me to want to know everything. It's kind of like why I love Wikipedia today so much. And I think so many people do because of the wormholes, but it's like I started to find myself to be like a creature of like, when I know something, I want to know it holistically. And it really began with celebrity. And even today, it's like, I'm a writer, but like, I was never affirmed in my writing by any English teacher. On the contrary. And even if you look at like, I made the mistake of going on Reddit recently about my book, and like people will comment on how like my writing style is extremely colloquial and that's very distasteful to some. And again, that's the feedback I was getting from my English teachers. So learning about celebrities was this like this thing that I became fascinated with, but I approached it with the same academic perspective that I think others were, algebra or calculus or what have you. So I think it just, that was the thing for me. And this is why I think a lot of people like celebrities, it's, you go to a dinner party. This is something that my boyfriend gets annoyed with all the time. You go to a dinner party with a group of strangers and, you know, let's say you got a banker and a lawyer and someone who works in market and all these things, but you can't really connect on a work level. And it's just, right. People are always interested in talking about celebrities, even if they're not interested in talking about it often, not always, they're interested in listening to it, or it becomes this thing that can really connect people immediately. And I said that my boyfriend hates it because it's like, it just will come up all the time where it's like, we'll meet a stranger and they'll bring up some celebrity they love that maybe I know that celebrity or whatnot. And it becomes a connective force, yeah, for better and for worse.
Being in the situation that you're in, where you built this amazing community for yourself online that has led you to becoming friends, or at least getting to spend real time with a lot of celebrities that you either like looked up to or you worshipped. How has that been for you? Not only with the whole, like, maybe don't meet your hero situation, but in terms of how that's made you feel about yourself and your own credibility and success. I mean, did you kind of enter into your current career having the particular goal of wanting to schmooze with these people? Was this more of like a pleasant surprise? I'm very fascinated by your trajectory and would love to know a little more about it.
Well, I will say I'm not very thoughtful when it comes to like, it's funny. I had a meeting recently with the team that was like talking to me about like, what's my goal for the next 5 years? And I was like, I don't know. I am very come what may about everything. So no, yeah. I never had that goal. Having celebrities in my ether was never something that was not that it wasn't interesting. It's just not something I thought about. This happens a lot recently where it's like, a lot of things that have happened to me or just in general, it's like, it's just not, it, I wasn't someone who really spent a lot of time, like, I try not to spend a lot of time thinking about myself or what I do or how I do it. I think I just do it. But what's funny is in writing a book and having to do a lot of press around the book, you're asked a lot of questions about your approach or your trajectory. And it's like, funny, because it's like, I don't really know. So no, it was not in the plan whatsoever. But to get into like the parasocial of it all and with celebrities, I have my celebrity friends who I talk to on social media. And then I have the celebrity friend that I met on social media and converted it to an IRL. And like, I was just in LA recently for book related stuff. And I'm going to name drop, but like, it is what it is. But Kiernan Shipka is someone who like, we've been friends on social forever. And then like, at one point we started texting and then we were like supposed to meet up several times and like, it didn't work out, blah, blah, blah. And so we finally met up this time. And that is an example of like, we went from someone that I knew who she was and she didn't know who I was. And then she knew who I was probably because like I shared a red carpet image of her at some point, blah, blah, blah. And then we would start sort of back and forth in the DMs, but we converted it to an IRL in which we hang out and we don't talk about celebrity. Like we talk about shit with us and like
life.
Life, exactly. And I don't see her as Kiernan Shipka, the famous person, but rather Kiernan, the person who was on time to the lunch that I was very late for, which I apologize. But so that's one of the things, is like sort of recognizing who are the real people and who do you have more of a business relationship. And also it's behoove of a lot of these celebrities to treat me nicely because of the industry that we're in. So I, you know, one thing my mom always asks me sometimes, if I interview someone that she likes, she'll be like, or this happened a lot with after the Euphoria interviews for The Cut, where people would be like, how was so-and-so? And it's like, again, going back to like the realness thing, I don't expect realness from a celebrity that I do not know. So I can't like tell you I have any perception of Zendaya outside of like who Zendaya chose to be during the time that this time we spent together. And I respect that. Like, I don't come away from it. So I think that what one thing I try and be mindful of is, it's like, especially like thinking about Sarah Michelle Gellar as an example, I call her my friend, but I took that cue from her. And I was like, cause for a while she had me saved in her phone as stalker, like, which was like, LOL, but like, no, she was like not wrong. But I point that out just to say that it's like, I sort of take my cue from the fact of like, oh, especially like with Coolidge, it's like, you get a, she's told me this. It's like, you get a lot of people in your life who have an agenda. They want something from you because of who you are. So I just try and be really mindful and respect boundaries and recognize the fact that like, I've been in situations, this happened in LA where I had dinner with a very, very famous person who I had never been around someone that famous in a social setting. And I had my phone on the table and I just kept thinking, if I was recording this conversation right now, because we were talking, not shit, but we were just like gossiping. And I was like, if I were recording this conversation right now, it could really be a thing. And I would never do that. But I just point that out to say that it's like, you're in situations sometimes where you're like, where you waffle between, I'm just at drinks with a human being. And then you're like, oh, but this is a human being who like people really care about their opinion. But I think I ultimately fall back to like the, you know, people are just people. I find that if they show no interest in who I am, then we're probably not meant to have a friendship. We're probably meant to have an interview, right? But it's like, I'm looking for friendships. I'm looking for good times and laughter and people that get me, because I feel like I am a thing to be gotten, you know, not as are so many others, but like, I'm not a simple person. So if I find like if there's a vibe and everything and I want to know them, then I feel like we move into friendship, but I don't ever try and like seek out celebrities to befriend. But these friendships often benefit me from a perspective of I can get them on my podcast or I can get access to them in an interview. So there's complexities to it. Like it's a business, it's a friendship, and it can be used in the business sense. And that's a great, it's a gray area without question.
And Evan, you know, there's a lot of people who also consider you to be like famous in your own right too. And I say this because, okay, so my assistant that you originally spoke to, she is newly 21 years old. She's from South Carolina and she came to New York for college and she is obsessed with all things pop culture. This girl has an endless library in her head. She's listened to every podcast, watched every show, reality and narrative. And she's just so on the pulse of everything that's happening on every platform, every person who's relevant. And she was so excited about me speaking to you. And I know that a lot of her friends felt the same way, where like you've achieved this level of, I don't even know what to call it. Like we can call it celebrity or respectability or desirability. And, you know, as I mentioned, I think it's so interesting that we're living in this time where like somebody with an interest, you know, no matter how niche that is, can find their audience and build that to achieve a certain level of like social stature. And what's your relationship to that? Because, you know, I think for me, I grew up in New York City. A lot of my friends' parents were famous. I went to private school. There were celebs everywhere. Walking down the street, there are celebrities. To me, celebrity culture was always something that just kind of like existed in the peripheral. And that sounds incredibly spoiled, but it just is what it is.
Not
you know?
Spoiled. It's your experience.
It's my experience. And it's just, I never really understood the hype about talking to a famous person or being around a famous person, because as you mentioned, I got to see so many of these people behind the scenes where you realize either they're not as cool as they seem publicly at all, or they're like really boring and kind of have nothing to offer other than what they provide artistically. So for you kind of going up this this scale and achieving this certain level of social stature, both in your own work, but being able to hang out with celebrities too, how do you grapple with that? How does that make you feel?
Uncomfortable, without question. Definitely uncomfortable. It's just not something that I, again, going back to the earlier question, I try with great purpose not to spend a ton of time thinking about myself or what I do or how I do it. And so with that, you know, people will come up sometimes and like, I love your content, for instance, is a thing I get a lot. And like, what I find, first of all, it's very flattering. What I find funny about it though, is it's just like, I'm just like posting like yesterday, celeb images or like the announcement about And Just Like That with like a dumb caption. Like, don't get me wrong. I can do a thoughtful caption like once in a while, but the majority of it is it's like, I'm speaking the language of meme culture. You know, I'm doing the We Did It Joe or whatever. And it's like, so as much as I appreciate it, sometimes I think that people give me more credit than I'm due just for, you know, I pick the celebrities that I like and I'm purposeful about like who I ship And I think that's one thing I'm proud of, is it's like, I'm not a celebrity meme account. If I don't know about the person, I don't talk about the person, and chances are I don't know, just, you know, again, Dove Cameron, Olivia Rodrigo, it's like the celebrities that are out there today. I just don't have my finger on the pulse, but I know what I like. And when I like something, I like it a lot. White right. Lotus and Just Like That, Sex in the City, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Sarah Michelle, et cetera, that I think that I'm proud that people seem to share in that sort of like obsessive quality that I have. I was the bartender on Watch What Happens Live last night. And like, I can't tell you how nervous I was, just because it's not something that I am comfortable with at all. And like, yeah, like I had a moment where I got in bed last night after it was all done, and I just like took a deep breath, because I'm like really into taking deep breaths.
Good. Yes. Oxygenation is important. Yes.
And I took a deep breath, and I just was like, because I'm always thinking about, like, you know, you do what makes you happy. And like, to be honest with you, like, that being on Watch What Happens Live, it was such a big honor. Don't get me wrong. It did not make me happy. It is not, I do not seek the attention or the accolades. The time that I've been the most happy recently, like in a profession or in like in this sort of space we're talking about, was when the Euphoria cover story came out for The Cut, and people were proud of the work that I made. That was like something that was so cool. But like, anything, I mean, like, yeah, anything that's like me centric, uncomfortable, but like something that's like, that's me being able to spotlight something that I'm passionate about, that I really like. And like, having weird things just seem to happen to me. Like the Sarah Jessica Parker invitation to the And Just Like That premiere. And like, I love being able to document that weird encounter on social media. But again, with the perspective of like, I'm a weirdo I'm never trying to come at it from the, like, let me take you inside the premiere of And Just Like That. No, it's more, the perspective is, what the fuck am I doing here?
Right. And that's really refreshing to hear. And it goes back to what I mentioned earlier about me feeling as though like talent and hard work is being devalued in this culture of us focusing exclusively on like our personal brands and how we come across on a surface level. And I relate to that so deeply. And I think it's refreshing to hear you say that, like, the day that story went live, you were like, yes, I have something to be proud of. What is there to be proud of from celebrity association? Not just for you, but for anybody. Like, agreed. What is there to be proud of a celebrity likes your picture, or if you have an exchange with somebody online? And even when it comes to like influencers making content themselves, like, you're right in what you said, that the landscape is shifting, and I do need to stop being so elitist and get my head out of my ass.
No, you don't. No, you don't.
But I do. If I want to like continue to make progress in my career, I can't at 28 years old turn into like an old Jew who's like sad about the world. Like,
well, perhaps you need to like dignify it more, but I don't think you need to change in any way. I think it's like, it's really a matter of yes and, because like, I'm like you, like, I'm a traditionalist. I like things the way they were. It's even when it comes to like new, even like when it comes to like favorite housewives, I'm always going to choose the older housewife, like older by in terms of early on the show.
Right.
But I think just like the recognition that you're allowed to be the way you are. You frame it as elitist. I don't think it's elitist, but like, however you want to frame it. But like, I think there's just, it's important to recognize that, like, I had that moment again with Dove Cameron where I'm like, wow, quickly shifted from who is this to, oh shit, who am I for not knowing who Dove Cameron is? Like, that's the shift.
Right. But yeah,
she's great,
I believe it. but no, I think it's, I just think it's great to hear you say that is really what you value, is like the body of work that you're able to produce. And I wish that there would be more emphasis on that. And I guess what I was trying to say is, like, I respect the fact that influencer culture and social media culture is going to continue kind of rolling in the direction that it's going. But I would love to continue to see more substantial work from more people who also have presences online. And that's what I think I've always liked so much about you from afar, is you've managed to create this like incredible digital community. And, you know, my 21-year-old assistant worships the ground you walk on, but you are also a writer and you're trying to write with dignity and write for respected publications. And you have your own podcast. You don't just want to coast on what kind of social notoriety like being online can get you.
Oh, and like, I love to do the work. I really, really do. I think that's why I go crazy and am constantly in this state, because I'm trying to get better at saying no, but I'm always doing things creatively just because I like to be creative. It makes me so happy, even in, you know, in, not necessarily related to like my writing or even just in general. Like, I like creative problem solving, et cetera. And I would say too, you know, a lot of that social stuff, it's like, I wouldn't have been able to get Sarah Michelle Gellar for my Buffy book if it weren't for social media, if it weren't for a level of trust that we developed on a personal level, but also because it's like, because she follows me on social media and is able to get a glimpse inside my brain versus how I, you know, use social media, it bonded us. She loves Housewives too. I share Housewives memes. We can DM about, you know, Crystal and Sutton fighting over the leather pants. Like, so I think that there is a value in the sense that I feel like with a lot of the celebrities that follow me, that they're, it's not so much just me about them, but they're able to learn about me and what makes me laugh. And we're able to, I always say, like, my favorite conversations with a celebrity are not about them or their work, but are about this thing we share in common. This is not a plug, but I have Cynthia Erivo coming up on my next podcast. And we spent a good chunk of time talking about And Just Like That, because we DM about it all the time. It's a subject I love. And I'm like, what better thing to talk to Cynthia Erivo about than And Just Like That? Because it's just so, she's not going to be asked about that in any other interview. So that's exactly why I want to talk about it versus talk to me about what it was like shooting blah, blah, blah. It's like, yes.
Which everybody asks. Exactly. It's a boring question.
But it's like, a lot of people have an opinion about And Just Like That, and we should be talking about it. That's how I feel. So I think it's just a matter of like, the benefit of the social is being able to learn about who these people are, and not necessarily in the ways they reflect it on their social channel, but in learning, oh, you also like this thing I like. And that's kind of why I try and share the song I'm listening to or the restaurant I'm at, not to be like, look where I am or look what I'm listening to, but because I think oftentimes I'm able to ascertain information, not just about celebrities, about people I like, but just sort of like in the things, the culture that we love that bonds us.
Right. It's showing who you are, especially for you, where so much of your social media presence is posting photos of celebrities and commenting on it, to get like a glimpse into who the brains behind the operation is, I think is really invaluable.
And so, like, yeah, sorry. One last thing I just would add is just like,
yeah, no, go.
One thing about me is like, and this is the one thing I do think about when it comes to myself is like, I know, and I think I even already said this, I know what I like. I'm like very, it reminds me of, there's a moment in the And Just Like That documentary where Cynthia Nixon is talking about directing episode 6, which if anyone hasn't seen the End Just Like That documentary, please run, don't walk.
I haven't, so I'm going to go do that.
Worth watching. But one thing Cynthia Nixon says, and I it just like really like made my heart flutter, is she's talking about how like as a director, she knows what she likes. And because she knows what she likes in life, that makes her a good director. And I think about that a lot, which is like, if you show me those blue belts, the cerulean belts and in Devil Wears Prada, I want the left one. I want the left one. You know what I mean? Like I know what I like. And I think that in a culture where there's very much sort of like people either waffle between things or don't want to make a decision, I will make a decision. I will have an opinion. And so I think that that's one thing that is great about social, is it's like, I'm able to share the things I love. And then because I'm someone who loves, I have a big heart when it comes to loving things. I'll get loud about it. And I'll adopt that stan language, because I stan.
Yeah. I have to ask, with stan culture, I know we're running out of time, but is stanning something that's a conscious choice, or do you think it's a higher calling? I think it's an important question to ask. Like, does somebody decide, I love this person so much, I'm going to dedicate a lot of my kind of consciousness to them? Or is it something about that public figure that takes you over and is beyond your control?
Well, it's shifted because of social media, because I was a Sarah Michelle Gellar stan before there was social media. So I was stanning not for any sort of, not that I do it today for clout or anything like that, but like it was something like, it's like you go, if you were to go and talk to the kids on the playground of my elementary school, Markham Elementary School in Mount Lebanon, shout out. If you were to go and talk to them, they would tell you that I was teaching people how to be slayers on the playground. Like I was disseminating the gospel, like for no gain other than this is a thing I love that I wanted to share. I feel like because standing has become somewhat performative in many ways, it's very, very different now. So I always say I only stan Sarah Michelle Gellar. It's the only thing I stan. When it comes to like Lee Pace, for instance, I'm like a dedicated fan, right? Like and emphasis on the dedicated, but like I think stand-up has changed just in the sense of like the clout of it all, and again going to the parasocial of it all, this idea of like wanting to attach ourselves for things so that like we feel that sort of like connected value. So in terms of like the calling of it all, I don't know the answer to that, but I know that like I don't think you can stand today the way you could when I was a kid, and it could really be about you and the person and learning about them and getting BB magazine at the local Giant Eagle and cutting it out with the scissors and trying to make a straight line and not have it curve at all, but also sometimes just wanting to rip it, but then like you get a little rip and then you have to like go and get the tape and tape it from behind, and like that sort of I had to work at it. Like I had to work to develop my techniques, and I had my little Sarah Michelle Gellar book that I made, and it was for me. I loved it. And it's like, it made me happy. It's still, I look back on it now, it's like my bar mitzvah was Sarah Michelle Gellar theme. Yeah. That's iconic. And I wasn't doing that so that 32-year-old me would have a picture of me for my bar mitzvah to show on social media and get a bunch of likes. No,
you loved it.
I loved it. And I love that about me. It's like it's really pure.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. My heart is like, you've warmed me, Evan. You've warmed me. It's not the ring light. It's you. So my last question for you is, if you had to project what is going to happen within the celebrity/influencer landscape, this is obviously a very broad question and we have no idea, but do you think that it's going to continue going in a particular direction? Do you think that we're going to see a rise of celebrities taking over their own narrative on TikTok? Do you think with reality TV, I mean, as somebody who is so entrenched in pop culture and pays attention to so much of it, do you have predictions about how it might change or wax or wane or differ in the next coming years?
My only prediction is that we're in a space right now where it's all about width and not about depth. And I think that will have to start to change. And so I think like we'll have to see less famous people and also more meaningful conversations between a celebrity and their fandom. I think about, I just went to Jasmine Sullivan's concert last week. And one thing that I was blown away by at that concert was the fact that every single person in that room knew every single lyric. And I just was like, Jasmine Sullivan is someone who her fans ship her. They love her. They know her. They ride with her. And I was like, that is such a, not many people can say that about their fandom. There's a lot of like passive fans or just like, again, stans, which I think has become a less meaningful word over the years. And it's like, I think that that's going to be the thing, is like, which of these celebrities or people that function in the world of celebrities really have that ride or die fandom? And also which of them actually know the work, right? It's like those Jasmine fans, they're not just fans of Jasmine. They're fans of the work. They know the work. They're dedicated to like the gospel that is Jasmine, as they should be. And so I think that's the question too, is it's like, you know, again, when you see people like Addison Rae going and making movies, it's like, okay, well, how many of her 22 million, I don't have TikTok, but how many of the whatever numbers she has, how many of them are converting over to the work? And I think that's going to start to become the question, is it's like, sure, you got a lot of eyeballs on you, but are they taking it to the next place and actually investing both like in terms of like time, but also bottom line money in you. So that's sort of the next thing, is like depth, not width.
Right. And I really, really hope for that. I hope that there is an increased desire for substance in all ways and for people to not just take up space for the sake of it, but to have something to say. And, you know, I will go off of you kind of big upping my elitism. I do hope that we see a high caliber of talent, at least in one subset of the industry, where people continue to put in the hard work and have something to say and, you know, pound the pavement in order to be able to do that. And I think that as long as I see just a little bit of that, I'm okay with all of the low hanging fruit that we're seeing. Yeah. Elsewhere.
And let me just say, one of the things that I read again when I did this stupid decision to read the Reddit thread about my book was like all of these people were talking about how egocentric my book was because how much I talked about my own relationship with Buffy and Sam Shiller and how much I love it. And so it's like people are going to see this as it's like there's always going to be conversations about sort of the ego and where we place ourselves in it. And here I am as someone who's tries to be so mindful of that. And yet that was a lot of what people saw. And so that's just how it's going to be sometimes is it's like your love of something else is going, some people might see that as, well, you're making your love of that thing all about you. And that's how they're going to see it. So I feel like you're always going to contend with sort of where our love of something nets out when it comes to how much of ourselves are we infusing in the conversation versus how much of that love is really about wanting, because for me in my heart, I just want people to love Buffy. I'm telling them how much I love it as a way to say you should love this too. But some people just read that as Evan, which is their right to read it as. So, you know, always learning. Well, always learning, but gonna try and spend less time on Reddit.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, and those of you who identify as neither, my name is Allie Weiss, and this has been Tales of Taboo. If you enjoyed what you heard, or even especially if you didn't, please consider taking 30 seconds, which is less than the amount of time it takes to order your coffee at Starbucks, and leave a rating and review on iTunes, and now that you can, Spotify. As with the merchandise, I so appreciate this community growing through word of mouth and honest, organic, positive reinforcement rather than having to take more desperado marketing tactics. So please, if you have a heart, consider. Additionally, please order Evan's book, Into Every Generation, A Slayer is Born, How Buffy Staked Our Hearts, and support the legend. I look very forward to seeing and hearing from you next week. And until then, be good.